Welcome to the International Black Summit interview series. This is an interview series podcast that we created in order to engage with current and past participants and facilitators of the International Black Summit. If you're not familiar with the International Black Summit, listening to us this evening will be a great opportunity to get to know us and what we do. The International Black Summit is an organization that was created in 1991, and our purpose is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. We host a number of events throughout the year, including our annual summit event, which is held the first full weekend in August every year somewhere in the world. It's been held in countries around the world and in many places around North America. And tonight, we will be interviewing Malika Redmond. Malika is a woman who was one of the facilitators of the International Black Summit as a young person, and I'm going to read her bio. But before I read her bio, I just want to introduce the interviewers, who's the two of us who are facilitating this session tonight. I'm Grace Lawrence.
And I'm not Grace Lawrence. No, I'm Glenn Grace.
Thanks, Glenn. So I'm just going to, before we get into having Malika join us in our virtual studio here, I'm just going to read a little bit about her bio. So let me just read this. Malika Redmond is the co-founder and CEO of Women Engaged, a seven-year-old nonprofit based in Atlanta, Georgia, that works to inspire Black women and young adults to become impactful leaders, key decision makers, and effective agents for social change through voter engagement and reproductive justice advocacy and leadership development. Malika has worked for 20 years, both nationally and internationally, managing projects that focus on women's human rights, racial justice, and youth empowerment. Malika founded the International Black Youth Summit in 1994, and for a decade led community leadership training, networking, and cross-cultural relationship building opportunities for Black youth from the continent of Africa and among the African diaspora, including hosting conferences in nations such as South Africa, Brazil, Jamaica, and the United States of America. Malika was one of the youngest national field organizers for the 2004 March for Women's Lives on the National Mall, and is the proud board chair emeritus of the Pro-Georgia Civic Engagement Table. Malika holds a BA from Spelman College and an MA from Georgia State University. During the interview, we'll be asking Malika about her work as an International Black Summit youth facilitator and as a leader in women's rights, racial justice, and youth empowerment, who has effectively used the summit tools and summit distinctions in her career, in her life, and in the summit. So we want to welcome you, and we'd like to welcome Malika to join us right now. Welcome, Malika, welcome. And for those of you who aren't aware, we have three divisions in the International Black Summit. We have the Adult Summit, we have the Youth Summit, and we have the Young Adult Summit. And so Malika is going to be joining us momentarily to engage with us, for us to actually speak with her about her experiences with the International Black Summit as a founder and her work in social justice and women's issues. Welcome, Malika. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Oh, okay, perfect.
So
welcome, Malika.
doing good. Doing really good. July's been good to me. So, and happy to be here. Happy to finally be able to make it.
Yeah, we really want to thank you for making the time. I know we tried to do this earlier and we had some scheduling conflicts. So really thank you for creating the time to be with us this evening. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
So one of the things, one of the reasons that we created this podcast was really to look at how the summit tools and summit distinctions are being used in people's lives and in the work that they do out in the world. And we think that you've been such an example of that from the summit, and particularly from the Youth Summit leadership. First, we just want to get a sense of your initial interaction with the summit, like how you first learned about it, your first event, like how you first came to participate in the International Black Summit and what your first summit event was. Do you recall?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if any of us can forget our very first summit moment. And so I absolutely can remember my very first summit moment. So my very first summit moment was in Oakland, California in 1993. Was it in Oakland, 93?
Yeah, it
was the I believe third summit. So. And then 94 was in New Orleans.
Correct.
So it was in Oakland, California. And, you know, got there because my mother had attended the summit in 1992 in Highland Park, Michigan, which was her very first summit. And something that my mother was always keen on is that if she's doing something that, you know, is motivational or, you know, something that has inspired her, that she wants her children to have the opportunity as well. So pretty much any kind of like seminar or any kind of empowerment kind of thing that she would have been a part of, she would have us go along. And so I remember when she came back from Highland Park, Michigan, and she talked about the experience there and, you know, how moving it was. And the conversation, I believe at that point, was about the relationship between Black men and Black women and just really kind of getting into that. But also, you know, really thinking about through the lens of Black economics being in Highland Park, a city within inside a city, and, you know, what sort of the positionality of Highland Park with regards to Black economic empowerment. And for one of the co-founders of the International Black Summit being from there and wanting to really just, you know, talk about those things. And so I remember that. I remember hearing my mother talk about that when she came home and let us know, my sisters and I, that we would be going the following year with her. And so we did. So we went to Oakland, California. And I mean, it was such a moving experience because there were Black people, you know, it's one of these things where, how to say it? It's like being, I think on one hand, like it's never, I guess in my mind, aesthetically, it never, we never lose interest in my mind because we are so complex, diverse in our features, in our look, and, you know, in our wealth of experience and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And so as a 14-year-old young person, I was just sort of mostly awestruck by the beauty first of the diversity, you know, and the range of who we are. For someone who was coming from a small city, you know, it was eye-opening and beautiful, you know, on the one hand. And the other part is that there were not a lot of young people. There was just about 10 of us. So we found each other and became close really quickly, but also really engulfed in the space. And, you know, Black people are not, you know, we're gonna like not only be beautiful, you know, but we looking beautiful and it's all these Black people that got, you know, beautiful things to say. And, you know, and I was just kind of enraptured, I think, with all of what was going on.
So it's interesting to me because you were so young.
Yeah.
And the Youth Summit hadn't been created yet.
No.
So what was it like being 14 years old in what was then only an adult space, really? It sounds like you were still able to, you know, engage in the conversation. Like it was, it sounds like it wasn't really fully going over your head that you were really being able to participate.
Well, it wasn't going over, I don't think it was going over any of our heads. And I wasn't the youngest person there, right? So, but it wasn't necessarily the conversation was going over our heads. But I do think that one of the things that we were sort of dealing with was a be seen, not heard kind of space at the time. So people were happy that we were there, but we weren't necessarily sort of like included in terms of, we were welcomed, but it was more of that space kind of like we love our youth. We're happy that you're here and we're having grown folk conversations. So it was kind of like that, you know, so we weren't unwelcomed. We weren't, folks were happy we were there. We felt loved. We understood what was going on in the conversation, but it wasn't necessarily ours.
Mm. And I don't know that the adults knew how to embrace you all.
Yeah.
Your energy, your enthusiasm, and the things that you actually wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, and I think in Oakland, I don't think we knew what we wanted to do yet.
Right.
I think what we were talking about it though, because we'd come into the room where the conference was happening, get inspired, right? And then we'd go back to one of the young people's hotel room, and then we would talk amongst ourselves about how we would do whatever what was being said.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So even from that first annual event that you attended, the young people were already beginning to have their own youth centered conversation.
Very, very true. That's another way to say it. It was pretty much an impromptu youth summit. So that's what we were doing. We were, in a sense, debriefing, talking to each other about what we were hearing, our perspective on it, how we would want to do it. And also thinking about, like, why aren't there more youth here? Because this is a really great space to be in. How to get more youth involved.
So Malika, at what point did you determine that you wanted to have your own? I know at the New Orleans, you actually announced it to the adults. But when were you kind of percolating that conversation and having your own event inside of the International Black Summit? Was it solidified in Oakland or New Orleans solidified that request?
No, it started. The rumblings happened in Oakland. And the rumblings were happening in Oakland, and it was because all of the young people that were there, like my sisters and I, were brought there by people, mostly more often than not family members, who were in attendance.
A lot of
So I say that also to say, in other words, we were young people who were already sort of raised in to think in those kind of ways, in a sense, because if you're there, you're there because somebody who is conscientious about like wanting to be a part of, spaces that are thinking, on the cutting edge of what's possible, and they've brought you, they want you to have that. So we were already kind of cued in that way, and I think that was the other thing for us, what had us really cling to each other too, was because I think the other part is that we were leaders in our own spaces at home in different ways, as young leaders, youth leaders, and maybe sometimes maybe considered a little bit of like a standout in some way at home, but we were all together. And so then we had some shared experiences because we had either parents or people in our lives who were exposing us to these kinds of spaces, which is not common. So it wasn't like we were common with our friends, if that makes sense. We were among each other who could say, yeah, I did the forum and this when I was 10 or this or that, or had this experience, where a lot of our friends, they don't know anything about a forum. They didn't know anything about a landmark, you know? So it was like one of those things where like we found each other, because even if in the forum space, you may be one of the only Black children in the forum, you know? So that's what I'm saying. We were very, very much unique, if that makes sense. So all that to say, it was already percolating for us in Oakland when we would have our conversations. And there was a young man from Detroit, and I can't remember his name now, who was really speaking like he was like, we should have our own youth summit. And we were all like, that's a great idea. And then everybody was like, but Malika, you gotta be the one to say it. I'm like, why do I have to be the one to say it? No, you gotta say it. I'm like, okay, I'll say it. So we did. I think we went up to the senior facilitators. Mm-hmm. Catherine was there. I'm not sure who else might be on the call that was there that day. But we asked them, we didn't tell them what we were gonna say. We just said, we have an announcement. We have something we want to say. So we geared ourselves up all week to be all, you know, those 3 days to prepare for a moment on Sunday to announce that we were going to do an International Black Youth Summit. And we didn't ask permission. We made a declaration. And that declaration was done in Oakland.
Just to give a little context for anybody who's listening, and who's not familiar with some of what you're referring to.
Sure, please.
Yeah, in terms of referring to the forum,
yeah,
or in terms of referring to Landmark.
Sure.
For people who are listening, Landmark Education, now Landmark, hosts a program, a course called the Landmark Forum. And when the International Black Summit was created in 1991, participants had to have completed the Landmark Forum before attending the International Black Summit event. And so when you talk about having access to tools for empowerment, yes, being youth who were self-expressed, being youth who were engaged in leadership in their own communities, and being youth who had, as Black youth, had completed the Landmark Forum and have had those tools before gaining access to the tools of the International Black Summit. So coming together, having that background and having that commonality, something that brought you together on a whole different level. I do kind of wonder, you know, given that most of the youth would have been there because their parents were graduates of the Landmark Forum and were also, you know, Black people looking to engage in this kind of empowering conversation together and might have been dragged to their first event by their parents or their relatives or whatever. Was there ever a sense that that they didn't want to come back, or was it clear that you guys wanted to come back the following year? And did you maintain any kind of communication between that initial summit that you attended and the next summit where you came together to propose the creation of the International Black Youth Summit?
So we proposed it in Oakland. You know, we made the declaration in Oakland. What happened in New Orleans was we were able to invite more young people. And the way we did it really was by holding those who were in attendance at the adult summit accountable to bringing a young person with them the next time, and that we would create a space for each other there. So that was what we did between Oakland and New Orleans, was that. And that was how we got more young people there. But what I would say is that I think the only thing that we talked about in Oakland that was, you know, if at all, wasn't a being dragged to a thing. It was one, it was like, again, happy to see you. Oh, your mom made you do the forum or whatever. We could talk about that, right? Because again, like I was saying, not only was it rare to see other, it wasn't often that you would see other Black people in a Landmark space for the most part, but even more so, like, as a young person, seeing other people that look like you and your age in that space. So it was really like, it was exciting to be able to, you know, talk to each other from that perspective and through that lens when we wanted to, right? But we were always, you know, code switching. So it was, but it was, you know, of our time, right? So, you know, but it was that we could do that with each other and we understood each other because we had that experience in common. So we could see each other in a particular way, which also allowed us to be able to hold each other accountable in a different way through our friendship. So, just the last thing I was going to say is the only thing I think we felt like between Oakland and New Orleans, because there was a desire to, you know, to do that, to, you know, create more of a youth space. I think the only two things that we knew were going to be, that were going to make the difference for young people participating. One was the time. We just were like, this goes on way too long. There's a lot of stuff we could talk about. And we can get to it a lot faster. That was the one thing. We just felt like these breakthroughs can happen faster. So that was one thing we were talking about, because we were like, we're in these beautiful places. We should be able to see these places. So we need to make time for that. So that was one. The second thing was cost and access. We knew that if we don't figure out a way for young people to be able to attend and eat and have a hotel room and be able to, you know, that it's, we're not going to be able to grow it. And so that was the two things. And then the third thing for us after New Orleans, because New Orleans was the other place where, and New York, where the forum was still a prerequisite, but we were very clear early on that we were going to let go of the forum as a prerequisite, because we just knew that we wanted the youth summit to be able to grow in a particular way. And we also felt like whatever the distinctions that were coming out of Landmark were things that, you know, in our mind felt like, well, our curriculum is better. That's just how we saw it. So these breakthroughs or whatever these things are, we can support each other, get there faster, and not have to pay so much money.
Okay. Malika,
our perspective.
What was it like to formulate your own curriculum and then ultimately create your own prerequisite?
Freeing. I think the thing that was, because we had already felt, and I will tell you, I'll give you some inside conversation. I think that for some of us, we really felt like Landmark was holding, in some ways, Black people back from leadership. And we just felt like, well, we don't need that. That was the youth summit perspective, you know, that we didn't need them to express our leadership or to validate it or something. And we felt like that there was, you know, there were, you know, undertones of racism that we just thought, you know, we got what we got from it or whatever. For some of us, it was, you know, For me, I really enjoyed what I got out of the forum. But in my mind, it wasn't, the deeper cut was at the summit for me. So I was okay with moving on. And I think that and then that was just kind of like where we were as a youth. And so we knew that we had enough knowledge from that, but also from, I think the other thing was we were way more interested in what we were learning from the senior facilitators, you know, anyway. And so I think that was more like how we were trying to, you know, in some ways replicate in a youth summit kind of environment. Because I think the thing that we saw too is that with the facilitator body, is that, you know, you could find yourself in somebody, you know, different personalities, different parts of the country, from the perspective of like what it looks like on the stage, you know, there's a particular kind of, you know, gender equity that's happening. So we also didn't feel like we had to ascribe to some kind of way of who gets to talk, who doesn't, who gets to be that kind of thing, or what you have to look like, or those kinds of things. I think that was also very important to us.
Malika, you know, one of the things, you know, I'll share a little bit about, about what you guys created. But there was a quite an emphasis on knowing who we were, you know, conversations about what we thought about Black people, what we think, what other people think about it. I think that that was that development was one of the probably the most critical things in terms of being clear who you were as Black youth inside of that whole consciousness. And I think that the youth curriculum really points to that and reinforces it at every turn of the conversation. Do you want to expound a little bit more on what had y'all have it be so so centric around who we were as Black people?
Well, I would say, you know, you know, shout out to Joyce, shout out to Glenn, shout out to Robin, shout out to so many, Chakaysha, shout out to so many people who helped us with the development of the curriculum, you know, and because too, in giving context, this was a big deal. Folks were not happy that we were letting go of the forum. It wasn't like, oh, okay. No, this was a real point of contention. You know, there was some real divide. You know, there was some real divide in the space. And I understood, you know, I understood it, you know. So, I mean, it was literally something that brought some folks to tears. I mean, it was really something, you know, that, so, you know, to be clear, you know, and then there were people, you know, there were folks, leadership, you know, founders of the International Black Summit who felt like it, this is such a critical piece to being able to do the work of the summit, is to being able to have these particular distinctions that come out of Landmark. So when we let go of it first, and, you know, in our minds, you know, in a way, you know, look, you know, kind of the youthful mind, we didn't understand why that was hard, you know, because we are like, you know, this is better than anything else, you know, so like, but, you know, but just to give that context, so really shouting out to all of those, you know, those that were in the adult space at the time, who were navigating that with us and helping to be a voice in that space and in that time, because it was upsetting for some, it was really upsetting for them. It was really, really upsetting, you know? And, but we were able to, you know, to move forward. We had maybe a little bit of an arrogant confidence in our, you know, in ourselves and in what we knew. And here's what was funny to me. What's funny to me is, and I think about it now, like as a mother and as I'm raising Amira, I'm like, it's so funny how we give these children strong names. We put them in positions and places for them to feel powerful and empowered. And then they demonstrate it. And it's like, wait a minute, but I didn't say yet, you know. You know, so it's wonderful, you know, but it, at the same time, I get it. It was like, it was a little bit like, wait a minute. Now we got you. You have your youth summit. Okay. You're doing your thing over there. Now you want to do this too. And we were like, yeah, we're going to do that too. And then we're going to have these prerequisites. And then we decided to do a whole thing where we were going to have prerequisites around the country, $25.
And I might add that you were not only were the youth first in the prerequisite conversation, but having a standalone prerequisite that paid for itself.
Yes.
And that was the youth came to the summit and said, we want to have our own prerequisite wherever. And the only restriction that we had was that it paid for itself. And the youth demonstrated that and actually created the a bonfire of prerequisites and activity. And, you know, I must add that Benita was baking cookies. I mean, Benita was like 14 years old when she first came to the summit. She had to get permission because her parents weren't coming along, but she was baking cookies and cakes and whatnot so that she could fund her trip to the International Black Summit. So, I mean, that's an example of the kind of camaraderie and ingenuity that was available to these young people. And they took it on and they really took it on. So I know we want to talk a little bit about your current, what you're doing, but is there anything else that you want to say about the formulation of the Youth Summit and your participation as one of the leaders? And or when was the last time that you actually led a youth summit was one of the questions that we.
That was Brazil. Okay. Brazil. And what was that? When was.
I think Brazil was 2003 or 2003.
That sounds about right.
Okay.
Yeah. So 19 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
So. Yeah, so like Glenn said, as we move, because we really want to have an opportunity to dive deeper into some of what you're doing now and how you weather you and how you use the summit tools and distinctions in life and in particular the work that you're doing now around social justice and women's engagement and reproductive rights. But before we do that, anything else about those youth summit leadership years? Any funny stories about that time?
Oh my goodness. I mean, you know, I could talk forever about the Youth Summit because it was such a beautiful time in my life and my development as a young person. I think the thing that I will say something that, let me see, funny. Oh God, we got a lot of funny stories. I mean, there's a lot of funny stories.
A few we can't share.
It's few we can't share because we think about the same thing, Glenn. You know, we got a lot of funny stories. There's been a lot of funny stories, a lot of really great times, you know, because we bonded and became really good friends, you know. And like I said, part of it is that we were able to, you know, we were unapologetic with each other and calling each other out on our stuff when we had to, you know, and folks would call me out, we could call each other out on our stuff, you know. And because we created a safe space within the summit, but we were able to have that safe space to create that there, you know, because we had, you know, a lot of support around us and our parents, you know, and the people who cared for us, who, you know, who did everything that they could to make sure that we could participate as much and as often as possible, you know, and everybody in a community of folks who were always, you know, giving to, you know, whether it's, you know, education or to, you know, scholarships for young people to, you know, all the kinds of things. And so, you know, it was really a community affair. But I would say that, you know, there was a lot of magic that came out of the New York summit, and that was the first time we really used our own curriculum, our full curriculum. And we had about 50 young people there that really represented the African diaspora in New York. And this was our first summit as facilitators with our own curriculum and blah, 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 blah. And there was so much magic that happened there. And I remember so many good things that happened. But I remember, you know, one of the things that happened, there were some young people that were there who had you know, who had been dealing with being in and out of the foster care system. And, you know, we were at the point in our prerequisite where we talk about what don't you want people to know about you? You know, we asked the question about like, what do you want people to know about you? What do you want, you know, if you could brag on yourself, like, what would you say, you know, in a safe space? And then what, you know, wouldn't you want people to know about you? But if they knew, it would set you free, you know? And one of the young people said, you know, because, you know, I've been in and out of the foster care system so long. He was a teenager. He said, no one ever taught me how to tie my shoes. So I still don't know how to do that. And it was amazing. Everybody was really just kind of like holding him in space, you know, and another young person came over and just started teaching him how to do it right then and there. And it just was so much love in the space, no shame, no stigma, no whatever, love and caring and support. And that to me always is like one of those moments where, you know, I knew we had what we needed, you know, to be able to do something. What we have is very special and makes a difference, you know, and can make a difference in a moment, you know, in a moment. And so, you know, yeah, it was just like a really powerful, powerful moment. But I would say to pivot, you know, to pivot a bit, you know, there's so much of what I think coming from the Youth Summit space that I've been able to take into my education and my career and all that. And I think the most important thing that I feel like I've taken along with me is that if I dream it, it's possible.
Absolutely.
You know, so therefore, you know, I can begin to build. I honed in on my visionary builder muscle through the Youth Summit, how to be a visionary builder.
Yeah, I mean, that's the purpose of the summit, to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community in the world. Yes. And it starts with actually identifying a vision.
Yes. You know, I mean, and you know, it doesn't mean that I don't get in my own way, you know, and past and different things don't get in the way at times. And it does. And, you know, and having to, you know, like, work those things out, you know, and not just like by myself, you know, but, you know, even when it requires for me, like, you know, I need to get some professional support around this, you know, that's in the way for me of actualizing a thing or whatever. So, you know, but that's what I would say is the muscle that I was able to really like strengthen as a young person doing the Youth Summit.
What would you say are your go-to distinctions? Have you gotten any go-to distinctions that keep coming up over the years?
Go-to distinctions that I go to. Oh, let's see.
Trigger, no out there, no.
Yeah, right. I mean, I was just thinking about, I was like, I was going to say, I mean, I think the thing that I find really important, especially now in the role I'm in, especially with all the things that are happening, and is being able to give myself enough space to see what others might not be seeing, you know? So it's like, you know, giving myself the space to be able to look for that, you know, even when everybody's saying this one thing, for me, I'm like, I got it. And I, you know, there's other possibilities here, and, you know, and I will allow spirit to let me, you know, like I will trust spirit to guide in that way, you know? So I think that's one thing that's been really important. And yeah, I mean, you know, oh, go ahead. Grace, I'm sorry.
As you were speaking and describing that, there are a couple of different distinctions that came to mind for me as you were hearing that. One is listening, right?
Yeah.
The summit distinction, authentic listening.
Yes.
And so having that creates the capacity to hear what other people are not hearing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's how,
and then you also talked about allowing space.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you also talked about allowing space too, which is a conversation inside the summit as well. So,
yeah, no, and thank you for saying that, because it was really that how I got to Women Engaged, because the context was really, you know, now I'm just putting on my political hat real quick, is that the context at the time when I started the organization was, you know, we were in like, you know, this, Obama era, right? But sort of nearing the end of that time. And there were a few things that I noticed that were like bubbling to the surface that I thought was really important to pay some attention to at their intersection. And I thought, as you know, based on sort of what my study was and the work I've been doing, but that was the intersection of voting rights and reproductive rights. I knew that in 2014, that these two rights were going to come to a particular head. And the one indication for me of it was the 2013 SCOTUS decision in Shelby v. Holder, when even at that point, which was the decision to undermine the Voting Rights Act by removing the key component around the preclearance, so that states who had a habit of disenfranchising and marginalizing Black voters and folks like that would be able to create those kind of bills and stuff like that and likely pass them. I mean, that we would see another kind of uptick in voter suppression behavior and that kind of thing. So I knew that then, and I thought to myself, we're not even, you know, fully out of this like Obama era, and the backlash is right starting to really rear itself. And then the other was, you know, I knew that for the people that I was talking to a lot in the repro rights choice space, I thought, were too confident that Roe would never be overturned. People thought that it could never happen. And I just thought that, yeah, wow, yes, it can. You know, it really can. It can. And it can happen in our lifetime. It really can. You know, because it's about, you know, justices and, you know, and voting. It's about all these things. So it can't. And so so in 14, I had that understanding and wanted to be in a position where we were working, and I was working, I had an organization that could be proactive about doing the kinds of things necessary to, you know, to face this and to work towards, you know, protecting these issues. So anyway, but yeah, it was about listening in a particular way. It was about, even though colleagues and stuff were like, this will never happen or whatever, I was like, I got it. I hear you. And, you know, so there was some of that that came from me as I started putting those pieces together.
You know, it's interesting that reminds me, just briefly, and I'll pass it to you, Glenn. It just reminds me of the conversation leading into, now I'm Canadian, right? This is the International Black Summit. I'm Canadian. I'm in Toronto, Canada, watching from the outside the American political landscape. But what you just said reminds me of the conversation leading into your presidential election in 2016, when people were so convinced that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And I thought I was losing my mind, because I was like, why am I the only person who seems to think that Trump has a real chance here? Why, like, I'm not hearing anybody talk about the fact that he has the energy. He had the energy. So, you know, again, that authentic listening, that ability to hear what other people may not be hearing or willing to listen to, you know, so.
Well, you know, one of the things that when you said that, our current declaration, you know, as you know, from year to year, we listen for a particular space, and we either are in an inquiry or a declaration. And this year's declaration is, when I allow space, I become present to who I am. Mm. And so clearly, not knowing that, you clearly have been demonstrating that inside of who you've been being. I'm going to ask you this. What I know that you have maintained some of the relationships from the Youth Summit. What tell us a little bit about why those relationships are so, so still important to you.
So I would say that for those of us that were young people at the time and facilitating, there are a number of us who I'm able to stay in touch with. I think social media has been really, really helpful in us being able to reunite and, you know, at least be able to see pictures of what's going on in each other's lives and things like that. That's been really important. But also just over the years, I think that not only did we have the summit space, but because we were so young, you know, we really became each other's like dear friends, you know, and, you know, and best friends, and even almost like siblings in a way, you know, in a lot of ways, with all of the dynamics that come with those types of relationships, of course, you know, but I think because it was so, again, almost like a very kind of, you know, it's, you know, the kinds of conversations that we were having with each other, with other young people in different parts of the world, you know, that kind of level of stimuli at your preteen, teen, even elementary, you know, these kind of years does create this kind of memory, love, affinity, you know, for each other, bond in ways, shapes you, you know, really shapes you. So I would say that, and I know, no, like Falami and I, we've been best friends since we met. We met in New Orleans in, I guess, 93. That was 93.
What is Falami's last name?
Saunders.
Saunders. That's Orin's daughter.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you.
So, you know, and, but all of, you know, all of us, Benita, you know, Alexis, like, you know, all of, you know, stay in touch, you know, in different ways. And, you know, and I just,
well, I was asking really that question about Falami so that we could get the last names in here. So.
Oh, okay. No problem. I know you have a transcript. And so what was I going to say? Oh, and then also I would say for me is what's also been the joy is to see how other youth leaders at the time, what they're doing now. It's amazing, you know. You know, Glenn, I'll talk about my Spelman sister for a second. Sure. Here, and Taryn, you know, who was the youngest, our youngest youth facilitator at 9 years old, you know, when we first started the Youth Summit, you know, and I'd love to know like how that, I can only imagine what she would say in terms of how that shaped her at such a pivotal, such a young age. But like, you know, and we were teenagers and Taryn was like 9. And I think Rashida might have been she was 8.
She was actually 8.
Okay, 8. Okay, so Taryn was
my
8.
Daughter for all Taryn.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so Taryn was 8. Okay. And then I think maybe Rashida was like right after her or something. And like, you know, but it was.
Oh,
like,
I just want to do a quick check in so that I catch all of these names. Because Glenn was an adult youth facilitator. I was never really very connected to the Youth Summit
right
back in that time period. So I'm just trying to attract people here.
Sure.
So you referred to Alexis, who is Alexis Gums.
Yes.
You referred to Bonita. What's Bonita's last name?
Walker.
Bonita Walker. Falami Saunders. Rashida.
Redmond.
Redmond.
That Redmond. Was one of
her sisters. And Nabila Redmond.
Nabila.
Okay. And Glenn's daughter.
Taryn.
Terrence Greenwich. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to do a little roll call, I guess. Just tracking.
There's many more. You know, Ebony Azizi.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and
Amafika.
Amafika, her brother, those Shakaysha's children.
Shakaysha's kids, yeah.
So, but all that to say that, what was I saying? Yeah, the friendships, the affinity for each other. It's been something that, I was saying what people have done since, yes. You know, it's really been exciting to see the kinds of differences folks are making in the world, you know, from writing books and, you know, and doing substantive work that's making huge differences in communities. In the legal space, you know, in the academic space, you know, in the entrepreneurial space.
Entertainment space. Yeah.
You know, it's really amazing. And, you know, I'm just really proud of that in the, you know, it's in having families and in parenting, you know, and watching those things happen as well. You know, and so it's really been exciting to see that too.
You know, it's interesting, Malika, you just mentioned parenting, and it makes me think about how you are using or have used the Summit tools and distinctions in your own life. Like we've talked about the Youth Summit, we've talked about your career and your work in social justice. And like, what about your personal life, using the tools and distinctions there? Is that something that you're present to, or is that something you, is it like driving a car, like you're doing it and you're using the tools and distinctions without necessarily consciously?
No, I have to be vigilant. I revert very quickly to, you know, to my inner self. I have to be vigilant. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. So there is the like choosing, you know, and I think people who say this all the time about relationships and stuff like that, you know, you have to choose it, you know, on a regular basis, you know? So, you know, it is about being, I have to be conscious. So no, it's not a, oh, I'm just in the, no, it is a something that I have to be conscious about and choose and, you know, and also watch. Like, I know that, like when I think about my own daughter and I'm like, you know, I do a lot of projecting. I mean, it just happens, you know, it's just like, I want you to do this, or I want you to, you know, down to, you know, I want you to, you know, I want to take you, you know, like things that I want you to do in this moment, you know, and thinking about her agency, you know, and that's something I have to be conscious of, you know. And so I would say that it's something that, you know, but I definitely get to practice it moment by moment.
So when you say you're conscious, are there any particular conversations or approaches or tools that you will consciously, you know, dig out of your toolbox and use, or?
Yeah, like I think about choice, like her, you know, I think about, I guess it's that her agency, you know, is kind of how I think about it, is, you know, where, you know, I can, you know, continue to support that, her self-expression, you know, like, you know, when am I, you know, like educating, or when am I like kind of in the way because I'm trying to get at a thing or something, So, but like I, like I'm saying it now, isn't how it lives itself out all the time. Sometimes I win at that and sometimes I don't.
How old is she?
She's 3.
Oh, she, yeah. So Malika, we're kind of getting to the end to wrap up. What would you say to someone who is considering doing the International Black Summit as an adult? So two parts, as an adult and then as a youth. What would you say to them about what's available in the International Black Summit?
Well, I would say that what I would say to anyone, young person or, you know, or not, is bring your most important dream, like the thing that you're holding really tight, and, you know, bring that with you to the summit. Allow yourself to give it a bit of air and maybe even be nurtured, you know, and allow yourself to be able to have that, right? In a way where you can give yourself the space to really like dance in your own vision and not limit that vision. Use the summit space to do that, you know, so that you can play, like play in your vision in that dream, you know, that you've got tight, like give it some air. Because you'll get distinctions, you'll get some tools, you'll get some ways in which to think about that and then to think about yourself and, you know. And then I would also say, in addition to that, for young people in particular, is the youth space is yours. So give yourself the opportunity to, you know, make it yours, to really make it yours, you know, and in that way, like ask for the support you want and need, you know, but then also be able to, you know, take a stand where you want to take a stand about, you know, like what's important to you, you know, and I would say for those caretakers of that space, you know, obviously, you know, to allow that to be, because I think, you know, really magic happens when that is available.
Absolutely.
That's great. I'm just curious. Did you ever participate in the International Black Young Adult Summit?
You know, I didn't. The when I stepped away from the Youth Summit, I was really at a point where I just left undergrad and I was entering like the beginnings of my career. And I just couldn't kind of pull myself at the time really back into the space as much, you know, and so I wasn't really able to do that. And the other part was, so there was some like life transitioning, you know, kind of young adult milestone kind of things that were happening. And the work that I was doing was also having me travel a lot and stuff like that. So there was that part to it. But the other part was, I think that at the time too, there had been a lot of various sort of like growing pains and tensions and different things that were, and dynamics and, you know, that were happening within the summit space for me, for, you know, for the development of different things that I know that, you know, there were some things that I know that we wanted to do in the Youth Summit space that at the time to the overall International Black Summit wasn't necessarily yet ready for, you know, and I think we were growing antsy You know, we wanted to start the nonprofit. We wanted to really move in a particular kind of way. We thought it was important for example, youth facilitators to have salaries. You know, we thought we should get paid to, you know, and that we should figure out how to pay folks to be able to do this work and go to trainings and stuff like that. We were thinking about it in that those kinds of ways. You know, so there were just a lot of different kinds of things where we were. And so it was just a lot of tensions too at the time. So I also, you know, needed like, okay, I need some space to, you know, to kind of like figure some things out for myself and, you know, those kinds of things. And so, you know, all of that combined, you know, just was kind of like to say, I didn't get back. I think, I don't know what year it was, but I definitely came back to the summit to participate in the adult summit. I think when it was back in Atlanta.
Right. Yeah.
And then have some conversations about, you know, how to support the youth summit, which I'm still very much interested in. And how to look from the background, in the background kind of way. But anyway,
let me say this mm-hmm. because you've been echoing this year's declaration throughout this whole conversation. And so I just want people to know, when I allow space, I become present to who I am. And you have been, for me, a demonstration of discovering who you are continuously. And I don't know that you've ever stopped doing that, which is one of the things that I really enjoy about this year's declaration, because it allows me the opportunity to continuously grow myself and to not limit and to understand that the limitations that are there, I've set them up. So there are no limitations really, except the ones that I don't allow myself to grow in. And so I also want to just acknowledge and thank you for your leadership in the youth summit. You know, you and Falami were the main catalyst. I know that you had a few conversations that were chirping in your ear from the rest of the folks, but the two of you took on the brunt of the whatever was going to come down from the adult conversation, and you handled it gracefully, respectfully, and owned it, and owned it with dignity and with leadership, and for that, I thank you for the curriculum that parts of the curriculum we're still using, because it's so powerful for young people to really get the sense of who they are, and just the opportunity to continue to have young people get who they are as a possibility, as an opportunity, as a vision. And, you know, I think for myself, I think that that's probably one of the most powerful things as a human being that you can have, is a vision for yourself. And then if you can then apply it to the Black community and the world, you now got gravy on top of a scrumptious meal. So thank you for all that you have done, all that you continue to do, and lots of luck and love towards you and your emerging family. And maybe we'll see some other little ones coming down the pike. I don't know.
Do we have to let you go now, Malika?
I do. I have to go. I got this little one, you know, ready to go, get her ready for her bath and daycare in the morning and all those things. But I really,
All those motherly things.
That's right. But I've enjoyed this. Thank you for having me. And, you know, let's just continue to really take good care of each other. I know there's this whole conversation and movement around self-care. And I just know that what I've learned through the summit in particular is that there is no self-care without community care. Community care, without community care, you can't have this. So they work hand in hand. We have to support each other and take care of each other, check in on each other, you know, love up on each other. And so, you know, so thank you for, this is loving up on me. So I do appreciate it. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Malika.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Blessings.